Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Chaf Tes. We are beginning today on Chaf Ches Amud Beis, a continuation of yesterday's discussion. We started the Mishnah yesterday regarding the Krovim. Mishnah listed 10 relatives that are possible to testify one on behalf of the other, and as we learned yesterday's Gemara, they can also not testify together against somebody else. And this is Gzeiras HaKasuv. The Torah tells us that the Krovim are not to testify one another, as we pointed out yesterday. It could be there's a Svara built in as well, and that once you're a Krov, so therefore you have a certain affinity towards one another, and therefore You're going to be biased in terms of the person. You won't be able to give objective testimony. Although, despite the fact that there's a svara, but perhaps the better way to say it is just simply it's gzeiras hakasuv. It's a decree that one is not allowed to testify either against a relative or in conjunction with a relative. In going through the details of the Gemara yesterday, we went through all 10 relatives and we discussed the relatives mentioned the Mishnah and the sons of the relatives and the sons-in-laws and the relatives. And Rabbi Chiya's Bais says that it's 8 that comes out to 24. 8 relatives that are mentioned in the Mishnah, as we pointed out yesterday already. There actually are 10 relatives mentioned in the Mishnah, but 8 of them in which the halacha would be that you can't testify against them, nor can you testify against their sons and their son-in-laws as well. So it's 8 that really becomes 24. It's 8 times 3, which becomes 24. And on this point, yesterday we talked about the two notable exceptions, the stepson and the son-in-law, where, as we saw yesterday, there were a couple of braises yesterday that discussed whether or not there is the halacha of hein uvnehem uvechasnehem when it comes to the son-in-law and when it comes to the brother-in-law. We discussed this yesterday. The Gemara brought down a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. And now the Gemara is finalizing the halacha. This is where we're picking up right where we left off yesterday. It's about two-thirds of the way down. It's in the middle of the line. The line begins with the words chorgo, and we are now continuing Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmo halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel that the halacha in fact follows like Rabbi Yossi. Now, which Rabbi Yossi are we talking about over here? So we already ended yesterday's shiur with a statement by Rabbi Yossi. And at the same time, we also had the Mishnah, which quoted Rabbi Yossi as well. So when Shmuel said that halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, so quite frankly, there was a little bit unclear in terms of which Rabbi Yossi he was following. And that lack of clarity will bring us to the following story. So there was a shtar matana, it was a gift, some sort of item, or could be property, that was gifted over. And it was also documented so that the gift was clearly being transferred over from one to another, and the two people who signed on the document were brother-in-laws. Again, giso, as we explained yesterday, means that they are two men who marry two sisters, so they are brother-in-laws but through two marriages. So sav Rav Yosef lachshuris Rav Yosef says, I think it's fine. The Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmo Halach Rav Yosef, because what did we just get done saying? We just got done saying that the halach falls like Rav Yosef. And right now, what he's thinking is that which Rav Yosef we're referring to is the Rav Yosef of our Mishnah. Meaning, remember, Rav Yosef of our Mishnah introduced us to Mishnah Rishona. What was Mishnah Rishona? As opposed to Rabbi Akiva of our Mishnah, who says that the 8/10 relatives are both on the paternal and on the maternal side. Rav Yossi yesterday said that Mishnah Rishona disagreed, and Mishnah Rishona was of the opinion that the psul karov is a function of Yerusha. And whoever's going to be possible for Yerusha is going to be possible for the psul karov as well. And so right now what the Gemara is thinking is that when we're saying the halacha is like Rav Yossi, what we mean by that is that the psul karov is only limited to those who you stand to yarshin. And if you're not going to yarshin that relative, so then you're not going to be possible. Here we're talking about brother-in-laws, and again, we're talking about brother-in-laws who are married to two sisters, so there's no way that they're going to be inheriting one another. So right now, the thinking process is that they are not going to be possible through karov, because they're not inheriting one another. And that, the Gemara says, Amalei Abai, Mimai, de Rabbi Yossi, de Masnisin, de Machsha Begiso. When we said the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, we did not mean that it was Rabbi Yossi of the Mishnah who allows brother-in-laws to testify one against another, or together, or to testify in conjunction with one another. Delma Rav Yossi de Braisa, de Pasul Begiso. We're talking about Rav Yossi of the Braisa, meaning at the end of yesterday's shiur, we learned together that Rav Yossi passels the brother-in-laws. The brother-in-laws, however, stop at the brother-in-laws, meaning, but it doesn't go to the next generation. But the brother-in-laws are, in fact, passel to testify one against the other. And what the Gemara is now saying is, that's what we meant when we said the halacha is like Rav Yossi. the brother-in-laws are possible against one another. It's only the sons of the brother-in-laws that are okay. So the Gemara says, Lo sakadach adam reshmo kigon ano pinchas, da'avinan achi v'gisi. So the Gemara says, well, I don't think that's right because of a comment made by Shmuel, where Shmuel said, to me together with Pinchas, we're both brothers and we're brother-in-laws. What does that mean? It's very simple. Actually, it means that they are two brothers who married two sisters. So they're actually both. They're both brothers and they're brother-in-laws. So he says, as a result of the fact that we're both brothers and brother-in-laws, so therefore we cannot testify together, we can't testify against one another. Now, implied in that statement, as the Gemara now goes on to explain, Aval Gisi da Amish Shabidami, had it been just brother-in-laws, it would have been fine. Meaning that seemingly is the significance of Shmuel's statement. By stating that we're both brothers and brother-in-laws, meaning it's because we're both that we're possible. If we were only one of the two, and obviously brothers are going to be disqualified, and that's Kuli Alma, it means then that if we're just brother-in-laws, so then we would have been okay to have testified one against the other. The Gemara says, no, because the Dilma could go on, Anu Pinchas Mishim de Giso. Kamar. The Gemara says, no, that can it could just very well simply mean that all Shmuel's comment was, is that by virtue of the fact that we're brother-in-laws, and even if we were just brother-in-laws, we would have been disqualified to testify one against the other, or to testify in conjunction with one another. So now Rav Yosef is a little bit stuck, because now we have brother-in-laws who signed on the document, and we've just now established that the halacha falls like Rav Yosef, but not Rav Yosef of the Mishnah, but rather Rav Yosef of the Braisa, and that means that these brother-in-laws were disqualified to testify and to sign on the document. Okay, so now Rav Yosef is going to try to find another avenue in which to be able to transfer the item from one to the other. The shtar right now is not working out. So Amar Leis, and now this is Rav Yosef who's trying to resurrect this transaction. Zilkanya Beide Mesira, Kireb Elazar. So we know, we have a classic machlokas that we've seen in Gittin again and again. We've seen it in Baba Basra already a number of times as well. And that is that when you have a shtar, when you have a document, so what creates the efficacy of the shtar? Is it the Eide Chasima? Is it the witness is signing on the star, or is it the Eide Mesira, or is it the those who are seeing the transfer of the star from one party to another party? So right now, what Rav Yosef is saying is that if you could find for me the Eide Mesira, those who saw the transfer of the star from one to the other, so now they will provide the validity of the star, and therefore the transfer would be a good transfer. And obviously, in order to say this, you'd have to be subscribing to the viewpoint of Rebbe Lazar, which, as Tosos over here points out, seems like that's how we paskin. We paskin like Rebbe Lazar, that Eidim Asir Karte, that it's the witnesses who see the transfer of the document is what is creating the efficacy of the document. V'amar Rabbi Abba, the Gemara says, but we know, we also have the statement of Rabbi Abba, which we've also already seen a number of times, and the Gemara here quotes it again. Mod Rebbe Lazar b'mezuyef mitochashu pasol. Even Rebbe Lazar says that Eidim Asira are a co-race, but still Rebbe Lazar would agree that if I have a document, and if I have witnesses signing on the document, and as we already pointed out, according to Rebbe Lazar, I don't need witnesses signing on the document. Eidim Asira karte. But still, if I have a document with witnesses signing on the document, and the witnesses are puzzle, this is what's called Mezuyef Mitocho, and even Rebbe Lazar would say that such a document would be disqualified. So now, right now we have a document for the matana, for the gift. And we have brother-in-law signing on the document, but brother-in-laws are disqualified as we possibly like Rav Yossi. And the Gemara suggested, well, maybe get the Eidim Asira. The Gemara says, I mean, even if we have the Eidim Asira, but it's Mezuyef Mitocho, and therefore it's going to be Pasul. So now Rav Yosef basically ran out of methods of validating this document. Amar Lei, Zil Lo Shafke Li Dos Finalach. So Rav Yosef basically said to the recipient of the gift, go, lo shafke li dos finalach. They're not allowing me to give it to you. Meaning, I simply have no way to transfer the item based on this document. If you want to rewrite another document, I guess it would be okay. That's my interjection. The Gemara doesn't say that. But in other words, but through this document that we have, there's simply no way to resurrect and to validate this document, and therefore the gift cannot be transferred on the basis of this particular document. We are continuing the Gemara. We're on the bottom of Chav Ches Amud Beis, about six lines from the bottom of the Amud, at the two dots, Rav Yehuda Omer. We are at the point of the Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah said that if I have, let's say, for example, a father-in-law and a son-in-law, and obviously they're connected through the father-in-law's daughter, the son-in-law's wife, so So they're connected between the two. So obviously they're related to each other, and therefore they cannot testify on behalf of one another. Rachman al-Islam, God forbid, but the daughter dies. So now they're disconnected. They're no longer related with one another. Rav Yehuda had the following chiddush in the Mishnah, and that is that if there were surviving children of that marriage, those children create the halachic glue that will still bind the son-in-law and the father-in-law. Since the son-in-law and the father-in-law now are sharing children, grandchildren, so therefore they are still connected to one another. They're still considered related to one another. And Rav Yehuda says that even though there's no longer a wife connecting the two, but the child, grandchild connecting the two is going to consider them to be krovim, and they will not be able to testify one against the other. And now a simple question the Gemara is dealing with, and that is the halacha of like Rabbi Yehuda's position. Am Rabbi Tanchuna, Am Rabbi Tavla, Am Rabbi Rona, Am Rav Alach Rabbi Yehuda. So a Masorah going back to Rav tells us that the halacha does fall like Rabbi Yehuda. Rava Am Rav Nachman ain halach Rabbi Yehuda. A Masorah that goes back to Rav Nachman that the halacha does not fall like Rabbi Yehuda. Vechein Am Rabba Babrachana, Am Rabbi Yochanan ain halach Rabbi Yehuda. A Masorah going back to Rabbi Yochanan that the halacha does not fall like Rabbi Yehuda. So on one side, Rav says the halacha does follow like Rabbi Yehuda. On the other side, Rav Nachman Rav Yochan says it does not. Now there are those who say that the statement of Rabbi Abba Bechana is going on the following Braisa. The Braisa over here is similar to our discussion. It's not exactly the same. Let's learn the Braisa together. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yossi Aglili Darshan. And if you have a matter that requires adjudication, so you're going to bring it to the shofet that's in your day. And the pasuk reads a little bit strange, and the Gemara notes, and do you really think that there's a shofet that you can go that doesn't live during your day? Meaning time is linear, and we haven't yet discovered a way of going back and forth in time. So who else are you going to go to? Of course you're going to go to the judges that are living in your day, and what else would be the what would be the other possibility? So the Gemara says Elazesha Yakar v'Nisrachek. So obviously the pasuk is trying to teach us a chiddush, and Rabbi Yossi is telling us that the chiddush akra is that if you had a judge who was at once upon a time related to you and no longer is related to you. Again, let's take a simple example where he was your father-in-law, and his daughter died, meaning your wife died. So now they're no longer related to one another. So can you go to a ex-father-in-law for adjudication? Can he be your judge? So Rav Yossi says the answer is yes, as long as it's an ex. So Amar Rabba Barbachana, Rav Yochanan, Halacha Rav Yossi, Rav Yossi Aglili, and the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Yochanan that the halacha does follow like Rav Yossi Aglili. So it is a point of interest that Rav Yochanan just passing like the halacha is like Rav Yossi Aglili, which is that you can go to a judge who is who once was related to but no longer is related to you. And Rav Yochanan just a moment ago Paskin against Rav Yehuda, but that, admittedly though, that's different though. Rav Yehuda was just simply saying that if there are children connecting you and the father-in-law, so Rav Yehuda says that that's connective, and Rav Yochanan says that we don't Paskin like him. But admittedly though, they are two different, meaning they're similar discussions, but they are really two different. There are two different points within the discussion, so they don't really it doesn't create any kind of inconsistency with one psak and the other psak. The Gemara now relates the following story. We're on the very bottom of Chaf Ches Amid Beis, Bnei Chamua de Mar Ukva. So we have Mar Ukva's father-in-law's sons, otherwise stated as his brother-in-laws, Krovim v'Nisrachu Hava. We are on the very top of Chav Tesam and Aleph. So once upon a time they were related, but no longer. Meaning Mar Ukva's wife died. And so now they were his brother-in-laws, but now currently they're no longer his brother-in-laws. Question of the Gemara. Well, first let's set it up. Hava asa l'kam l'dina. So they go to Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva was a judge, and they wanted the case to be judged. Amalu pasin l'chu l'dina. So Mar Ukva says, I can't be as a judge to you. So Amalei my daitech Rav Yehuda. So now they said, well, why? In other words, is it because of the sheet of Rav Yehuda? Meaning Rav Yehuda says that as long as there are children, so then there is still going to be a connective bond between the in-laws. And so now what the Gemara is proposing is that, the Gemara is assuming that there were children out of the marriage, and so now there are still connective bonds between him and the in-laws, and therefore, and Rav Yehuda's Shita is that they are now still considered related, and therefore he cannot judge because he's still considered a karav. So the brother-in-law said to Mar Ukva, "Ana ma'isin nigrasim imaravadei nalach Rav Yehuda. We could bring a letter in from Eretz Yisrael telling you that the halacha does not follow like Rav Yehuda." So basically, they're saying to Mar Ukva, "It's fine. It's totally okay for you to judge us. Meaning, we are no longer brother-in-laws. Unfortunately, our sister, your wife, died. And even though they're children, and even though there's an opinion of Rav Yehuda, we don't pass on like Rav Yehuda. So it would be perfectly fine for you to judge the case." Amar Luhu, so he tells his brothers, "Atu bekava dikira id bekabahu. Did I cling to you through wax?" Meaning, when I married your sister, did I become connected to you permanently? Meaning, no. And meaning, I'm admitting that we're no longer connected one to another. And yes, my wife died, your sister died, and we are not connected one another. We're not kroven with one another. And I'm with you that the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda, and that our children are not going to create any kind of halachic bond one to another. The lo kamina pasal chuladina elamishum de lo tzitzinadina. It just happens to be that because you're my brother-in-laws, because I know you so well, I know that there's one small issue in that you guys don't listen. Meaning, I've seen you before, and I know that you're not going to, and whatever the details are, however he knows this, but he knows that they're not going to listen to him. So therefore, the reason why he's not going to be judging the case has nothing to do with a halachic consideration of related, not related, once related, children connecting them. No, the halacha is that he's not related to them anymore. But the reason why he's not going to judge them is because he knows they're not going to listen. Continuing in the Gemara, we are at the two dots on, towards the top of Chav Tev Samad Aleph. We are right before the wide lines of the Amud. Oev Zesha Shashbina Vekama. We're talking now about people who have a particular affection to one another and people who have a particular hatred to one another. So first we'll talk about affection. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Amar Rav Kol Shiva Yimei HaMishta. So it's the best man at the wedding, and the Gemara says, and it really doesn't even last that long. It's only for Sheva Bracha. So, best man at the wedding and for the Sheva Bracha, so they're considered such close friends that they cannot testify one against the other. V'Rabbanim Mishmei D'Rava Amri Afilu Miyam Risham Ve'Elech. And the Chachamim say in the name of Rava, not even. Meaning, it's the best man at the wedding, only the day of the wedding, not even Sheva Brachas. Hasone Koshlo Diber, and then the Mishnah goes on to say that somebody who hates him is somebody who has not spoken to you for 3 days, meaning had an opportunity to speak to you within those 3 days, but refuses to speak to you as a result of the fact that there's animosity that exists between the two of you. And Rav Yehuda Shita in the Mishnah was such individuals cannot testify against one another because they are not going to be able to be objective. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the following brisa: Vehu lo oyev lo. So he wasn't his enemy, and now the Gemara interjects with a drasha, yi'idenu. So as long as he's not an enemy, so he can testify on his behalf. V'lo mevakesh ra'aso, yidinenu. And again, according to the pasuk, where he wasn't looking to harm him, so under those circumstances, you can judge the individual. Ashke chansone, so we darshan out from these psukim. Now how exactly the drasha works, it's not perfectly clear. Meaning it's not the context of the Torah over there is talking about killing somebody inadvertently, b'shogeg. And so it's not perfectly clear how we are extracting these points of judging and testifying when really the context of the Torah over there is not talking about judging and testifying, but okay. However the drasha works, it's a drasha. And then the Gemara goes on to explain, oev minalan, oev minalan. So now, from the Torah, I see the sone. How do I see the ohev? So karibe hachi, vuhulo oyev lo, velo ohev lo. So it sounds a little bit like it's a play on the word oyev. Oyev and ohev are similar to one another. Yi'idenu. So as long as you're neither a somebody who hates him or somebody who loves him, so then you can testify. Velo mevakesh raso, velo tovaso, yidinenu. And if you're not looking to harm him, if you're not looking to do exceptional good for the individual, so then you can judge him. In other words, as long as you're somewhere in between being his best friend or being his worst enemy. So midi oev tziv. So the Gemara says, okay, but still when all said and done, it doesn't say the word oev in the Torah. So the Gemara basically seems to be just rejecting it as a drasha. So elasvaru, so the Gemara says, okay, it's not a drasha, it's a svara. So the Gemara says a svara, which is a very straightforward svara. It's the one that we probably all assume when we learn the Mishnah. And that is that when you're an enemy, so because you're his enemy, so you are not going to be able to be objective about him, and you're not going to be able to see any good within the individual. And immediately what you're going to think is, guilty. Same thing is true if you're an ohev. If you love the individual, same problem, just the opposite. You're not going to be able to see any bad in the individual. You're only going to be able to see good in the individual. And therefore, the only thing you're thinking to yourself is acquittal, and you cannot see it any other way. So, v'rabanan, hailo ohev lo v'lo mevakesh raso my darshibe. Now, the Chachamim don't agree with Rav Yehuda. Now, we already know this from the Mishnah. Meaning, in the Mishnah, the Chachamim said back to Rav Yehuda that the Bnei Yisrael are not chashev. They're not concerned about this, meaning they can maintain objectivity even though they have either a close relationship with somebody or they happen to have, unfortunately, animosity with an individual. So, with that being stated, so the psukim that we use to darshan on behalf of Rav Yehuda, what are the Chachamim going to do with those drushas? So that's exactly the Gemara's question. The Gemara's answer is chad l'dayan. So the Gemara says one is to teach us a judge, meaning that the Chachamim do agree to Rav Yehuda to a certain degree, and that is by judging. Meaning that if you have a case where the judge either has a particular affection towards a litigant, or a particular hatred towards a litigant. So here, even the Chachamim would agree to Rav Yehuda that you cannot have such a judge judging the case. So in this degree, so actually the Chachamim do agree with Rav Yehuda. It's only regarding testifying where we say that a person can remain objective. Now, as far as the other drasha, what are we going to do? I'm Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara teaches us another halacha v'hulo yevlo v'lo mevakesh raso mikan l'shnei tamid chachamim shesonim ze et ze she'in yoshu medin ke'echad. If I have two tamid chachamim who hate one another, so they cannot sit in judgment together. They're not going to be able to have a fair fair discussion, dialogue, and back and forth regarding the individual. The judges, unfortunately, it's a terrible thing to think about, but the judges unfortunately hate one another, and so therefore the deliberation is not going to be a balanced deliberation, and therefore you cannot have these judges serving on the same bench together. We are at the Mishnah, in the middle of Chav Tesam and Aleph, Ketzabotian Sa'idim. And now we're going to go through together the actual process. This Mishnah is going to take a step-by-step in the process of how exactly the court proceedings are going to work. So, case about Genesis Adam. So, first we're talking about now an examination of the witnesses. Hayu, machnis noson lechedem ma'aimim aleim. So we take them into a room, and we're going to scare them. Umotzien es kol adam lechutz. We take everybody else outside. Misharen es agadol shebehem. Leaving only the older of the two witnesses there. The omrim lo. Tell us how you know that this one owes this one money, meaning it's a civil case, meaning we're in the third parak of Sanhedrin, so we're discussing right now civil cases. So basically, how do you know what is the proof? What testimony do you have that will lead us to the conclusion that this one owes the other one money? Im amar hu amar li shani chayev lo. So if he says, well, it's an admission that the person just simply admitted that he owes the money. Ish plani amar li shu chayev lo, or basically so-and-so told me that he owes him. So lo amar klum. So an admission, whether it comes from the actual mouth of the lova, or if it comes from hearsay, an admission is nothing. Very interesting, and we're going to spend a lot of time discussing this, that even though the person made an admission, but if it was a flippant admission, so that halachically is not going to have any significance, and we will talk a lot about that over the course of the Gemara today. The only way an admission is going to work is where the admitter, meaning the borrower, knows that there are witnesses over there, knows that he's admitting in front of witnesses, and he says, I'm admitting in front of the witnesses that I owe you 200 zuz. Then and only then do we have a proper admission. And the Gemara again is going to discuss this in much greater detail. So after that, we're going to bring in the second witness and we're going to examine him as well. If they are now aligned and they are saying the same thing, these two witnesses, so now deliberation begins. And now the Gemara goes over the possible outcomes of the deliberation. If of the three judges, two say that he is not liable and one says that he is in fact obligated to pay, Zakai. So then that means we have the majority going in the direction of not liable, and therefore he's not liable. Shnaim omrim chayav, echad omrim zakai. If we have two saying that he's obligated to pay, one saying he's not obligated to pay chayav, then he's going to be obligated. Echad omrim chayav, echad omrim zakai. And now if I have one against one, or even if I have two going in either direction, so v'echad omer niyodeh, but the third judge is simply in abstentia. In other words, he simply doesn't know. And he says, niyodeh, I really don't know. Meaning, I don't know how to cast my vote. I don't know if I should be saying chayv, I don't know if I should be saying zakai. And so therefore, he is simply going to give an abstention. So Yosef and Adayin, and then we're going to add other judges. The reason why we're going to add other judges, explains Rashi, is because Eni Odea is not considered a vote. It's considered now that the judge is no longer here. And therefore, what we have now is a court of two. We learned in the first parak of Sanhedrin, you should not judge a case with a court of two. You should have minimum three. Now, obviously, we'd like an odd number, but over here, because one of them said Eni Odea, so we're just going to keep adding judges. And remember, we discussed this a little bit in the first parak in terms of the process of adding judges. We're going to add a pair of judges. We're going to continue adding a pair of judges until we end on a majority vote. And yes, it's true that under these circumstances, it could be a stalemate. It could be a deadlock. But for our purposes right now, we're just simply saying that at two, even if the two of them agree with one another, we're going to have to add judges because we cannot have a basing. We should not have a basing that's less than two. I'm sorry, that's less than three. Continuing in the Mishnah, Gamar Sadavar. Now, so we have gone through the examination of the witnesses. We've gone through the deliberation of the judges. Now we're up to the verdict. And the Gemara goes on to explain the process of the verdict. Gamar Sadavar Hayimachnis Nosan. So now what we would do is we would bring the litigants back in. Hagadol Shebadayanam Omer. And the greatest of the judges would be the one speaking on behalf of the judges. And he would announce, Ish Ploni Ata Zakai, Ish Ploni Ata Chayev. So-and-so, you're going to be innocent or acquitted or acquittal over here. Maybe not the best word because we're talking about a civil case. You won't have to pay. And ishponi atachayev, and you do have to pay. Meaning, basically, they're going to announce a verdict. The important thing, which the Gemara is going to note, is that no information is given regarding which judge voted in which direction. Meaning that the verdict that's given and provided to the litigants is basically, we, the court, have come to this conclusion. But no individual judge is going to be declaring exactly what he stated. And then the Mishnah is going to make this point very clear. Uminayin. And upon exiting the Beis Din, the judges themselves should not say, Ani mezakeh v'chaveri mechayvim. Meaning the judge goes over to the one who was found guilty and basically says to him, look, I'm really sorry. You know, I was in your corner. You know, I really wanted to vote in your favor. But what could I do? My colleagues, so they found you chayv. Look, I was one and they were two, and I'm really sorry, but I was pulling for you. So a judge should not say this, as the Mishnah Zen Amar. Now we have in our Mishnah one of two possible psukim that are being quoted over here, Lo Selech Rechel Ba'amecha and Holech Rechel Megalasod. Each of the psukim are speaking to the basic idea, which is that this is Lashon Hara, meaning by declaring what each judge is saying, it was not necessary, meaning the verdict is a good verdict, it is a correct verdict. There was no reason why each of the positions of the judges needs to be expressed. That's not how the ruling works. The ruling works based on the majority vote. And so therefore, if any of the judges comes out afterwards and reveals what exactly were the opinions of each of the particular judges, so it would be a violation of Lashon Hara. And again, the Gemara in tomorrow's daf is going to be discussing this in a little bit more detail as well. We start with the Gemara, Hecha Amrin Aluhu. What exactly are the witnesses saying? Meaning the Mishnah just simply says that those witnesses are going to be intimidated. What we don't know is the method of intimidation, and the Gemara is going to give us a little window into what exactly is going to be said to these witnesses to make sure that they are going to be telling the truth and they're not going to come up with any kind of fabrication. The Gemara goes on to give a couple of suggestions, three suggestions to be clear. Am Rav Yehuda, Hachi Amrin Lahu. So the Gemara's first suggestion is based on a pasuk in Mishlei. The Gemara quotes the pasuk, Nisim v'ruach v'geshem ayin. There's not going to be clouds, winds, and rain. Ish b'tzal memata sheker. As a result of the fact that someone's speaking a lie. Meaning that if you tell a lie in court, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be so upset that there's going to be famine. So Amalu Rava. So Rava says that's not going to scare anybody. Yachol Amemar, a witness when he hears this, he'll just simply say to himself, Shav Shni Havakafna. For 7 years there was a famine. V'abava umana lo chalif. But if somebody's a craftsman and someone has a skilled profession, so he'll find work, he'll make money, he'll find food. Meaning, I'm not going to be affected by a famine. So it doesn't personally affect him, and so therefore it's not really going to scare him. Second suggestion of the Gemara El Amar Rava. Amrin lo mevit v'cher v'cheshnon. Club, sword, and an arrow. Ish o neber eo echaker. But if somebody's going to testify falsely, so this is what you can expect. Meaning, basically, it's going to precipitate war. If you are going to go into court and you're going to speak Lashon Hara, so again, Amidas Adin, Kadosh Baruch Hu's measure for measure, is that war is going to be introduced into the land as a result of that. And yes, in other words, there has to be some explanation of why this is considered Mida Kenegan Mida. I don't have an explanation off the top of my head right now, but in other words, but it's the pasuk certainly indicates that one will result from the other. So and again, the Gemara says that's not going to scare people because there could be a plague for 7 years, and a person basically says, "Look, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to take me, he'll take me whenever he wants to take me, and the plague is not going to really affect me one way or the other. It's up to Hashem when I die." So again, the person is not going to be moved by such an argument as well. So finally, we're up to the third suggestion of the Gemara El Amar Rav Ashi Amar Li Nasam Bar Mar Zutra Amrin Alehu. This is what we tell the witnesses in order to intimidate them. Sahadi Shakri A Ugraihu Zile. You know, it's really, really low to go into court and to lie. And when I say it's low, meaning, do you know who's going to think lowly of you? Not only everybody. Not just everybody's going to think poorly about you, but the people who hired you, they also think that you're dirt. They think that you're nothing. In other words, if you could be bought in order to lie in court, you will be so demoralized. Even the people who bought you out think nothing of you. And the Gemara says, and how do I know this? The Gemara says, a pasuk in Malachim dechsiv. This is regarding Yizevel. When she tried to take the property of Nabal, so she hired witnesses in order to testify falsely about Nabal. And the Gemara quotes the pasuk, "Vahushivu shnayim anashim b'nei Belial negdo v'yaduhu lemor beirach galokim v'melech." So she hired witnesses, and the pasuk says that when she hired the witnesses, she hired b'nei Belial, people that had no morals whatsoever, no ethics whatsoever. Basically, they were the worst. And she's basically saying that. She's saying, I'm hiring the worst of the people, but that's who I have to hire in order to lie for me in court. So you see that even the people that hire you think nothing of you. So basically, it is an appeal to the self-respect of a person. All of us have a certain amount of self-respect and dignity. Maybe some more than others, but all of us have a certain amount of self-respect and dignity, and we're basically trying to appeal to a person's self-respect. Don't lie in court. No one thinks highly of you. Not even the people who hire you are going to think highly of you. Im Amar Hu Amar Li. We're now going to be launching into a lengthy discussion on the Gemara. Really, it's going to be the remainder of today's daf, and that is admissions. Meaning our Mishnah touched on the issue of if the witnesses step forward and said, you know, he admitted to me that he owed me money, so the Mishnah says, Eino Klum, that's nothing, meaning that's not going to be an admission, and the Gemara now is going to be sitting on this topic of admissions for some time. So the Gemara quoted the Mishnah, the Gemara says that our Mishnah is going to be a support for that which was stated by Rav Yehuda. Obviously, the Mishnah came before Rav Yehuda, but basically, once you learn the Mishnah, and once you see the statement of Rav Yehuda, you'll say that they are supportive of one another, and they're in agreement. In order to make an admission in front of witnesses, you first have to point to the witnesses, and you have to designate the witnesses, and you have to say the words, Atemedai. You're my witnesses, meaning I'm going to make an admission, and just to make sure that we understand that what I'm saying is conscientious, and deliberate. So I'm now designating you as a witness in order so that the admission now will be a valued admission. If a person says, I owe you a money, sorry, if the towing says to the nitan, if the mava says to the love, you owe me a money. Amar lehein, and basically the love shrugs her shoulder and says, sure, yeah, whatever. Yes. So, lamach amar lo tenei oli, now the next day he says, now give it to me, amar mishati anibach. So he says, look, I said yes, but you know what that was called? It was just called sarcasm. It was called banter. Like, in other words, I wasn't serious. I just wanted you to go away. So I said yes, but I didn't really mean it. So, in fact, pater. So the halach is that in such a case, mishat nibach, when he says that I was just joking, so that actually is going to be a legitimate excuse, and he is going to be exempt, meaning that is not going to be a legal admission. Tayin ha-me'achid, the Gemara quotes a brisa as well, supporting this idea, manili bi'adecha, I have a mana. Amar lohein. He says, yes. Lamacha amar lo tenayuli. Next day he says, give it to me. Amar le mishate nibach. And he says to him, I was just joking. I know I agreed. I know I said yes, but I was just joking. So pater, under those circumstances, he's going to be exempt for the reason we just explained. V'lo od. The Gemara says, and we'll take it even one step further. Ela afilo ha'ichmin lo edem achari gader. Even if, let's say the towing took the witnesses and put them behind the fence, hid the witnesses, and now engage in a dialogue with the borrower. You owe me a money. Amalohain. He said yes, not knowing that the witnesses were standing right behind the fence, listening to the conversation. Ritzon chasheh. Toda bifne ploni ufloni. Would you be ready to admit in front of so-and-so? Amalo miyara neyashem atach fein ledin. He says, no, are you kidding? I know what's going to happen. I'm going to admit in front of witnesses, and then you're going to take me to court. Lamach amalo tenei oli. And the next day he goes to the court, and he says, okay, give it to me. And amalo mishat tenei bach. And he says, I was just joking. So even in those cases, he's going to be potter. Meaning, because again, the bar did not know that there were witnesses over there, and the argument of Meshata Nibach, I was just joking, is going to be a reasonable excuse. The ain't on the Mesis, and then the Brisa ends with three words, which seem to be a non sequitur. The Brisa ends with the words is that we don't make any kind of suggestion, or we don't advise a Mesis. Mesis, as we discussed already before, somebody who tries to seduce other people to be over to Avodah Zarah. So the Brice ends off by saying that we don't make any kind of suggestion to the Mesis. So the Gemara immediately reacts to the last three words of the Brice of Mesis Mandakashme. Why is Mesis coming up over here? What does that have to do with anything? Chesur Mechzer V'Achiktani, we're missing part of the Brice, and the Gemara goes on to explain the missing portion of the Brice. Im lo tanin toanim lo. Now, in the case of civil law, where there was an admission, but it really wasn't a proper admission. But the next day when he takes him to court, he says, you know, you admitted to me that you owe me the money. Now, at that point in time, the bar could say, if he knows how to say this, Meshata Nibach, I was just joking. And that would be a legitimate excuse, meaning that that's acceptable. But he didn't know to say that. So we, the Beis Din, will not make any suggestion to the defendant and say, you know, right now is a great time for you to say I was just joking. If he doesn't know how to say it, we don't teach him how to say it. However, contrast that with Dina Nefashas, but in a capital case, if there was some sort of argument that could be offered by the defendant, but the defendant doesn't know how to make that argument, so we are going to educate and tell the defendant exactly what to say in order to defend himself. And this goes back to the basic idea, which we've already articulated a number of times, in that in a capital case, so there is a mission statement by the court, and that is to try to exonerate the defendant. Meaning, if the defendant is inexcusable and is a cut and dry case, so then you're going to try it as a cut and dry case. But if there is a way to exonerate him, so v'yit silo se'eda. So we should try to do so. So the Gemara is saying that when it comes to a capital case, dina nefasha, so we should try and even educate him and provide for him arguments that he can make. But in the civil case, we're not going to do so. The Gemara says, but even in the capital case, there's going to be an exception. And now we understand the last three words of the Brice of Ein Tonel Mesis. And that's what the Brice ends off by saying. But if he's a Mesis, so the Torah says that we're not allowed to have any compassion for the Mesis. The Gemara goes on to make exactly this point. Maishna Mesis, Am Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, Mi Pirkei de Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Shmieli. I heard this from the Shirim of Rabbi Chia. Shani Mesis, he's different. The Torah says he's not allowed to have any compassion for the Mesis. And so therefore, for the Mesis, you're not to try to provide for him any form of defense whatsoever that would potentially exonerate him. The Gemara wants to know, what could the Mesis possibly say? First of all, how do we know that this is true? Meaning, it's interesting. We know because the Torah says lo sachmo, but the Gemara now is giving another reason why we know this, or how we arrived at this conclusion. We learn from the original snake. You know, the snake, when Akash Baruch Hu read him the riot act and read him the sentence as well, so he could have defended himself, but he didn't. And why didn't Akash Baruch Hu educate him and tell him, you know, Nachash, here's what you could say, and here's what you could say, and Akash Baruch Hu didn't do that. Why? Because the Nachash himself didn't make the Taina on his own behalf, and so Akash Baruch Hu was not going to now help and educate the Nachash in terms of what defenses he could have made. And oh, by the way, Mahavale Lamemar. And now the Gemara asks a really simple question. Well, what could the Nachash have said that would have defended himself? And he could have said, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishomer. He says, look, I told you to eat from the tree. Akadosh Baruch Hu told you not to eat from the tree. So who should you be listening to? Should you be listening to the Rav, or should you be listening to the Talmud? Obviously, the Rav knows better. The Rav knows more. You should be listening to the Rav. You should not have been listening to me. So this is the line of defense that the Nachash could have given. So, and the Gemara over here, normally the Gemara just asks the question rhetorically. The Gemara here gives the answer, Divrei HaRav Shomim, meaning you should listen to the Rav. You should not have listened to the Talmud. Now, in this line of reasoning, so the Mesis can use this as an argument in order to defend himself. And Tosus is bothered now by a really simple question. We have just learned together that if somebody entices somebody else to be over to Avodah Zarah, as a line of defense, he could say on his behalf, well, I told you to be over to Avodah Zarah, Kosh Baruch Hu told you not to, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishomer. And Tosus over here, the small Tosus on the Almud, the only Tosus on the Almud, asks a really simple question. We have just learned together the line of defense for every Mesis. Meaning, how are we ever going to be able to convict a Mesis when he could just simply defend himself using the line of Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishomer? Tosfos offers the following suggestion as an answer. V'yesh lomar, third line in Tosfos. D'davka nachash lo nistavish lo lahasis, v'lo nanash elefi shebasa takala al yado. So Tosfos over here lays down an interesting answer. When it comes to the Nachash HaKadmoni, he actually does not have an isser of being a Mesis. Meaning, he only got punished based on the result, not on the attempt, because the Nachash did not have an isser to try to dissuade or to entice Adam and Chava from being over to Avodah Zarah, or in this case, from going against Dvar Hashem. However, Tosfos goes on to say, Aval Mesis shenitztave shelo lahasis nimtza kishem Mesis over. But when you have somebody who is actually enticing somebody, so for him the Avera is the act of enticement. That's the Avera. So whether or not it did not yield in actual Avodah Zarah, once he's trying to entice somebody to be over to Avodah Zarah, that's the Yisr, and therefore the line of defense of Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishomim is no longer going to be a line of defense. So suggests Tosfos, and as an answer to the question of why wouldn't this work for every Mesis. Amar Chizkiyah, towards the bottom of the Amud, Minayin Shekol Amosif Goreya, when you add, so what you're really doing is you're subtracting. So it is subtraction through addition. The Gemara goes on to use this as a classic case study, Shenamar, Amor, Amar Lakim Lo Sochlum, Yimeno Velo Sigu Bo. When Chava told the Nachash that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us that we're not allowed to eat from the tree, what she did, she added, she said, we're not allowed to eat from the tree, and we're also not allowed to touch the tree as well. And then once she got to touching the tree and saw that nothing happened from it, so in her mind now, touching was just as usher as eating. And once she touched it and she saw nothing happen, so now in her mind it led her to the erroneous conclusion that, oh, eating from it must be okay as well. And so that is an example of Mosif Goreh. The Gemara gives a couple of other examples of Mosif Goreh. From Mishashi Amar Mehacha, Amasayim V'chetzi Arko. The Torah, in describing the dimensions of the Aron, describe it as 2.5 amos. If we take out the aleph, explains Rashi, from the word amasayim, so it leaves us with masayim. So the number goes from 2.5 to 200.5. So by subtracting a letter, we are we're going to be adding. And the another example, Rav Ashi Amar, Ashtei Asrei Yiriyos. We're talking about the 11 curtains that cover the Mishkan on its top. So if we took out the ayin, so it would be Shtei Asrei, it would go from 11 to 12. So these are other examples of being Mosif Goreya. Actually, it's the other way around. Over here, these are examples of taking away, which really are going to add. But in other words, any distortion in either direction, both in addition and subtraction, is going to yield the opposite result. So when the Torah gives us the mitzvos, which is supposed to follow them without addition and without subtraction. Amar Abaye, the bottom of the Amar Loshanol, Amar Mishat Anibach. The Gemara now is going back to the admission. So we said that when a person makes an admission but does not do so in front of Edom, or does not formally designate the witnesses before making the admission, so he could argue and he could say, I was just joking. Abaye tells us that that's only when he says Meshat Enibach, Ava, Amar. But if he says, we are now in the very top of Chav Tesamid Beis, Lo Hayudvar Me Olam, what are you talking about? Never happened. Meaning, what admission? What are you even talking about? I never said anything. So Abaye says, Huchza Kafar. And at that point in time, we assume that he's a liar. Meaning that the witness has actually said that he made an admission. So for him to say, Meshat Anibach, it's acknowledging that, yeah, you're right, I did make the admission, but I wasn't serious. If he said, however, it never happened, well, what he's doing is he is arguing with the Edom, and so therefore he's a liar, and therefore he's going to have to pay. Amra Papa Bereder of Achaba Adahachi Amina Mishmei de Rava. The Gemara now, however, cites a dissenting viewpoint, and that is the opinion of Rava, which is Kol Mili Dichri Lo Dikiri Inche. If I say something and it doesn't have any meaning, it doesn't have any context, and I just say something, so I'm not really expected to remember it the next day. Right? Ask yourself if you can remember what you had for breakfast a week ago. Okay, probably not. So in other words, when you say things, so without there being proper context and preparation and conscientiousness, so it's more than possible that you could totally forget what you're saying. Meaning, Rav is telling us that it's totally excusable for a person to have forgotten that which he stated. And so when he says, I don't remember saying such a thing, it's within the realm of possibility, and therefore he's not huchza kafran. He's not considered lying. And even though the witness has said, no, we heard him make the admission, if the witnesses weren't designated, and even if he says, I don't know what you're talking about, it never happened, so it's possible that he simply doesn't remember. Gemara tells a couple of incidents. So there was a person who hid Edom underneath the bed or behind the curtains of the bed. Amalei manali biyadecha, and the accusation starts. Yomi 100. Amalei hein, and the nitan says, "Yep, you're right, I do." So Amar iri v'shach v'lahav al asadi. Now I know no one here is in the room right now, but let's imagine that there were people awake, or let's even imagine there are people sleeping in the room right now. Would you allow them to testify on your behalf? So Amar lelo, he says, "No, I'm not ready to make this admission in front of witnesses." So Amar Rav Kahana, Amar lelo. So Rav Kahana says this is not going to be a valid admission. An admission has to be made where the one who owes the money knows that there are witnesses over there and is doing so with the deliberate knowledge and intent that he's saying it in front of the witnesses. Over here, he wasn't prepared to make the admission in front of witnesses, and even though he did make an admission, but at least, as far as he was concerned, there was nobody there, and he clearly stated he was not ready to make this admission in front of witnesses. Continues the Gemara. There was a person who hid the witnesses in the cemetery. So again, the Tohen says, you owe me 100, and the Nitan says, yep, sure, no problem at all. Yep, I owe you 100, whatever. Are you ready to let both the living and the dead, they were in the cemetery, so are you ready to let both of them testify on your behalf? Amar Leilo, he says, no, I'm not ready. Amar Rabbi Shimon, ha-amar Leilo. So Rabbi Shimon says, okay, no means no, meaning he wasn't ready to testify in front of witnesses. Now, in terms of the designation of the witnesses, so the Gemara is teaching us in the name of Rav Papa or Ravina that if the borrower was the one who designated the witnesses before he made his admission, that for sure is going to be now a proper admission. an illegal admission. But even if the mava was the one who designated the witnesses, and he did so in front of the lova, and the lova was shosik and he was quiet, so shtika ko does, as if the lova himself designated these witnesses, and then if he follows up with an admission, this is going to be a significant admission. Taima da amar lova lo, ava isha sekachinami. And look, in the stories that we just learned together, it's because the lova says, I'm not ready to testify in front of witnesses. But that means, however, that if posed the question, are you ready to testify in front of witnesses, and he doesn't say no, even though he doesn't say yes, but his silence is acquiescence, and it means that he's ready to now make this admission in front of witnesses, and therefore a follow-up admission in front of witnesses is in fact going to be significant. Another incident. How the have Karele Kavr Rasha. There was a certain guy in town. He was running around town, and they referred to this guy as Kav Rasha. It was pejorative. Rashi says, Malo Kav Shtaros Yeshalav. There was a sack of notes that were held up against him, meaning he borrowed from everybody. He owed everybody. And he walked around town, and they just referred to him as Kav Rasha, because tons of people had notes against him. Amar. And what he wanted to do was he wanted to try to protect his reputation. And so he made the following statement, Man Masiki bi ela ploni ufloni. So he says, you know, I don't know everybody money. What's everybody talking about over here? Like, these are the worst rumors. I do owe money, but I only owe money to so-and-so and so-and-so. So he identified two people he owes money to. Oh, they got so excited. The next day they take him to court. And now they're telling people, hey, we have an admission here. He admitted that he owes us money. So also Tavula Dina come to Rav Nachman, so they go to court in front of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman is presiding over this case. Amar Rav Nachman Adam Asur Shalol Aspias Atzma. Rav Nachman says, look, just because a person says that he owes debts to people doesn't mean that he owes them money. Sometimes a person says that he's so in debt just so that people don't think that he's wealthy. People like to conceal their wealth. People would like it that people, that others don't know exactly how much money they have. And so if they go around crying poverty, or here, even better, crying debt, so people do that, meaning it's an acceptable behavior so that people can conceal how much money they in fact have. Right? Right. I'm not really wealthy. Look, consider how much money I actually owe. Okay, a time when people wanted to conceal their wealth. So, and there's still people out there like that. How would Dava Karele Akbar Deshachiv Adinare? The Gemara tells another story, where, again, there is a guy who was, again, referred to not by the nicest of terms. Again, being described in pejorative terms. Rashi explains, I'm reading the Rashi, Asher Shalonena Mimamono, Kachbar Zeshashochav Aldine Zare, Ve'ino Nena Mehem. This guy's got money, and he's sleeping on his money, and he doesn't like to get any benefit from his money whenever. Basically, they're referring to, they're describing this person as being the biggest miser. Kikashachiv Amar. Now, when the person was about to die, so he made the following declaration: Panaya, Panaya, Maskebe Zuze. So he says, you know, so and so and so and so, they do have legitimate claims against me, and I do owe them money. So now he identified people who actually are owed money by him. So now, and obviously there's no documentation, because if there's documentation, then we wouldn't be needing an admission. But he made an admission. And now, also coming to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. So the case is taken to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, and Amar Lahu, Ki Aminan Adam Asui Shalol Asbi Asatzma Hani Milim Echayim. Aval Achim Yisalo. Look, when does a person cry poverty? And as we described a little bit earlier, he's saying that he's totally in debt. In order to conceal his wealth. A person is doing that while he's alive. But if he's about to die, so there's no point in him now concealing his debt. And rather, over here, I guess you can even argue in the other direction. Meaning that as he's about to die, so now he knows that he's gonna meet his maker, and he wants to come in with a clean slate. So now when he makes the admission that he owes somebody money, now Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi says we should be taking him seriously. And this admission should be registered as a legitimate admission. So, parapaga. So now the estate is paying out the debt, and they got to paying half the debt. Okay? They didn't have all the money. Whatever the case was, they only paid half the debt. So, tavun ladina leidach palga. Now, finally, these two lenders had enough, meaning they were patient, but now enough. So they went back to court in order to demand the second half of the obligation. Also coming to Rabbi Chia. Now, here they go to Rabbi Chia. Amalu kishim shad amasu shalol asbi as atzmo kach adam asu shalol asbi as banav. Now Rabbi Chia actually disagrees with the previous svara, and he's of the opinion that when a person says that I'm in debt, he'll say that both for himself and he'll say that for his children as well. Meaning a person knowing that he has a lot of money and knowing that there's going to be a significant estate that's going to be passed on from him to his children, he doesn't want his children to be bothered by all these people. And so what a person will say even as he's dying is, oh, I'm in such debt, knowing that even if it's not for himself. In other words, he's saying that for his children so that people will think that his children also don't have a lot of money, even though there is this big estate. But people will now say to themselves, oh, let's leave the family alone. They really don't have a lot of money. In fact, he admitted not only for himself but for his children as well that they're in debt. And therefore, Rabbi Chiya says that this admission also is not to be taken seriously. It does not have a legal significance, this admission. So now, Amru Lei Nezov Nehadar. So now, after Rabbi Chiya came to this ruling, so the two lenders now are thinking to themselves, oh, wait one second. We just got paid half the debt, but according to Rabbi Chiya, it's money that really is not owed to us. So now, these are good people. These are scrupulous people. Real ethical people. So they turn to Rabbi Chiya and they say, should we return the first half of the money? So, Nezov Nehader, Amar Lahu Kvar HaRezaken. And Rabbi Chiya said, no, it's not necessary. Meaning, the Zaken, meaning he's referring to Rabbi Yossi, second time in the Masechta, we refer to him as a Zaken. Kvar HaRezaken. Remember, we talked about this going back to Da'av Chavdal in Sanhedrin, where right the Gemara wanted to make a point of how the Amoraim and Tanaim and Eretz Yisrael respected one another. Here is also, by the way, just another very good example of how they respected one another. Rabbi Chiya didn't agree with Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, but in terms of overturning the ruling of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, so he was not prepared to do that. Meaning that if they already gave you half the money on the based on the psak of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, let that psak stand. I don't agree with that psak, but I respect it enough to the point where if you got paid based on that psak, allow the psak to stand. Okay, we are on Chav Tes Amud Beis, halfway down on the Amud, and now we're talking about again a legal admission. And the Gemara's discussion now over here is as follows: if in fact it is a bona fide admission that was made, so now can we convert that into writing? Meaning, again, remember the reason why we need the admission right now is because there's no documentation. Meaning, if there was documentation, I wouldn't need an admission. But over here, there was a loan, there was a milvah alpeh, there was no documentation, and the borrower now is making an admission that he owes the money. And the question now is it a valid admission or not? And we've discussed this now extensively over the course of today's daf. And now the next step of the discussion is, if in fact it was a valid admission, can we have the witnesses or the court who heard the admission, can they write it down, converting this into a milva b'shtar? So, hodu b'fnei shtayim v'kanu miyado, so kosvim. So, v'im lavein kosvim. So, if he made an admission in front of two, followed up with a kinyan, and the kinyan was, let's assume we're talking about a kinyan over here, and the kinyan is going to ratify the admission, meaning it is going to concretize and ratify and show everyone that this is a real admission. So in doing so, so now the witnesses are allowed to actually write up this admission in a document. So now this is a, this is going to be the, This is going to be converted from a milvah alpeh to a milvah b'shtar. The imlav, however, without a kinyan, ein kosvim, the witnesses cannot write up the admission without the kinyan. B'ifnei shlosha v'lekana miyado. Now let's say the admission is done in front of three. So Rav Amar kosvim, so Rav says, you know what? Three is a beis din. Once you admit that you owe money in front of a beis din, so even if there was no kinyan that was done, meaning a beis din is such a serious venue, such a serious context, so immediately that can result in taking the admission, accepting the admission, and converting it into a note. The Rav Asi Amarin Kosher, now Rav Asi is of the opinion that we do not write it. In other words, because over here, even though it was said in front of three, but these three were not contextualized as a court. as the Gemara is going to point out and explain in just a moment from now. So there was an incident where there was an admission in front of three. Now remember, Rav was of the opinion that once there are three people over there, immediately that can be converted into a document. However, Rav, out of deference to the opinion of Rav Asi, did not take this admission and convert it into writing.
There was a Udisa. Udisa is a note of admission. Zimna kasvina, zimna lo kasvina. Sometimes we're going to write it, sometimes we're not going to write it. Kenifi viyasve lo kasvina. Meaning, if the three people were already there, and before the lova arrived, so you had the three people already sitting there. So under those circumstances, lo kasvina, we don't write the we don't take the admission and write it and convert it into a note. And the reason why is because the basin was not put together specifically for the purpose of admission. Kanfinu ihu. But if the lova put together the three people specifically for the admission, so now the context tells us that the whole court over here was put together, it was assembled for the admission, and therefore the odisa can be written. Rava ma'afilu kanfinu ihu lo kasvinan. Rava goes one step further. Rava says, no, even if the three people were put together by the lova, and the lova admitted in front of the three people that he owes the money, I still can't write the shtar udisa. Ada amalu havu alai dayane. Unless he says to them, you are my dayanim. So it's more than just simply, contextually, this is a court, but he actually has to articulate and specify and designate these to be the judges for the purpose of the admission. Mar Baravashi amar, afilo amar havu alai dayane. Mar Baravashi goes even one step further. Even if he assembled the court, even if he said atem edai, or I should say better, atem dayanai, you're my judges. Ad kvia duchte, unless it is established as a court, meaning that this room is set up for the court. Vishachem izan lelebedina, and they were summoned from the court. Then and only then is the admission going to be a valid admission. So basically, what the Amoraim here are arguing about is how much context do I need? How much seriousness do I need in the setting in order so that we know that the admission is going to be a valid and legal admission? We'll stop over here. Again, we finished up the discussion of the Krovim. We talked about the various psakim at the end of the Mishnah regarding the brother-in-law, regarding the father-in-law and son-in-law who are sharing a child and a grandchild. And various loose ends, so to say, regarding the sugya of Krovim. And we started the Mishnah on Chavtes Amar Alf. It went through the process of the actual case itself, meaning how does the court proceedings actually work. We talked about intimidation of the witnesses. We discussed deliberation amongst the judges. We talked about an I don't know as a possible vote. And the Mishnah concluded by talking about how the verdict is actually going to be issued. The Gemara spent a lot of time talking about, one, how exactly the witnesses are going to be intimidated, and two, the main part of today's daf was the admission. In the Mishnah, I knew the Mishnah was very clear that if it was just a flippant admission that was made in front of witnesses, that does not have any legal bearing whatsoever. It has to be a serious admission where the witnesses themselves were designated. And then part B of today's daf was talking about taking that admission and converting it into a document. And under certain circumstances, you can take an admission and actually convert it into a document. What those circumstances are is exactly what the debate that we've just seen over most of the Amud Beis of today's daf.